I want to welcome to Upcoming Disc Michael Starr, who's no stranger to this program, and he's got with him Michelle Talbert. She's the producer, and Michael's the director of It's In the Blood, and it's the origins of the Chattanooga racing circuit. So we're glad to have you along. I got a chance to preview this movie, and it really brought back some neat memories for me and some nostalgia, and I had a lot of good times with it. So I want to welcome you to Upcoming Disc. How are you guys?
Great. Thank you so much for having us.
My pleasure.
Good to be back.
Listen, I watched this movie, and I have to tell you, my dad, it brought back memories. My dad's passed, and he took me many years to stock car races we had in Reading, Pennsylvania. So it was a different circuit, but I got to see these style cars and stuff. And we used to draw them when I was kids in school. We'd make little cutouts and put them on our walls. And so this brought back a lot of memories for me, and I'm assuming it brought back some memories from you. Can you tell me the origin of what led you to this film?
No, anything about racing myself. Wasn't interested in it at all. I had, growing up, my dad mentioned to me one time that my grandfather used to race and used to run moonshine. And I thought to myself, oh, no. Breaking them all, I don't want to know anything about that. So I never really asked any more questions about that. And as the years went on, didn't think anything else about it. And I received a Facebook post that actually came out from the Nashville Fairgrounds track. They have a Facebook page, and a friend of mine apparently was on that page at the time and sent me a copy or forwarded the Facebook post to me with, and it was a picture of a beat up old race car, and it had the driver's name painted over the top of the door, and it said Charlie Griffin with an ITH at the end, but just said Griffin. And so my friend, just forwarding that post, said, could this be your granddad? And so that started a series of questions and phone calls and emails to people that were there at the fairgrounds trying to determine if that really was my grandfather, and sure enough it was, and that was very exciting.
So tell me what went through your head when you realized that there was this whole life that you didn't know about your grandfather.
Well, it was very, it's really hard to explain other than just to say that it almost became an addiction for me, because one story led to another, and the stories were so exciting and so crazy and just so dramatic that I had to, you know, once I'd finish one story, it would, one person would lead me, they would, you know, say, well, call this person, he's got more information, and so I'd call that person, and they'd have five other stories, and it was just, I could see this movie playing out in my head of all these wonderful adventures that my grandfather had that I knew nothing about, and so it just gave me a really, really strong desire to learn more and more and learn everything that I could possibly learn about him. Well, and then that led to stories of his friends that he was racing with around town or running moonshine. It led to really exciting, interesting stories about his buddies, too, that were here all around in Chattanooga. And so I thought to myself, my grandfather was very quiet. He never really talked about his past. And so it was just very intriguing to me, because I just, I didn't know anything about it. Here is this man that was my grandfather for all these years. And he, he was very handsome and and very, always drove really nice, cool cars, but right. I just thought he was a handsome man. I didn't know that he had all these wonderful, adventurous stories in his past, so it was pretty amazing.
So when did this journey turn into a movie?
I ended up interviewing, seriously, no exaggeration, over 200 people.
Wow.
I had a notebook with me, and I wrote down notes from every person I talked to, and I thought that maybe, it is a movie playing in my head. And so I have a brother-in-law, and he and his wife are into acting, and so I was talking them about the story, and they also said, man, this sounds like a movie. And so I said, well, how do we go about doing this? And so they just happened to know Michael and his fiance Kim, and so they connected us, and we got on the phone with Michael, and he asked a lot of questions on how can we turn this into a movie. And so originally we did a screenplay about my grandfather's life, and so we have that screenplay. But then as we talked about the screenplay and put it together from all those notes that I wrote, you know, after all those interviews, Michael encouraged me to bring it out to Chattanooga and to sit down with those folks that we did the interviews with and to get them on film. And so we did that, and really quickly we thought, well, it would be really cool if we put all these interviews that we're doing for these folks into a documentary. And so it just kind of developed. It evolved, I guess.
Sure it did. And Michael, why don't you pick it up from there a little bit and tell me, okay, now you're involved in this. What were your first thoughts?
My first thoughts were, this is a massive story. This is the biggest thing that I've ever been involved with as far as, you know, historically.
Right.
You know, it's a biopic, so you want to get it right. So I probably had, I had all of Michelle's notes and interviews, and then flying out to Chattanooga, you know, I was like, take me to the restaurant that he ate at, take me to the roads that he drove on,
right?
Take me to the guys that made the moonshine, and one of the guys actually let me taste a little moonshine, and I can imagine that, you know, back in the 50s, it actually was really good. I can't say that it was, you know, brown liquor, but it was definitely white liquor, and it was interesting, to say the least, very powerful. But it really gave me a sense to kind of, you know, get into the head of Charlie and what these guys were doing. And then, you know, we would go to the racetrack and watch the dirt races and, you know, walk around the pits and really kind of see how, you know, the lifestyle of these guys really, you know, rolled out.
Yeah.
So it was great for me to kind of sit back and say, okay, I've got documented interviews with the guys that knew him and, you know, just conversations about the days back when. And, you know, they started getting a little emotional, and I just leaned in and I was like, I think there's a documentary here. And when we looked at the footage, we were like, you know what, we'll give it a shot. We'll see what we got.
Well, and you can see that emotion in the interviews for people who watch the film. And I got to tell you, you guys touched on something I had no idea about. Being a stock racing fan when I was a kid, I never knew about this correlation between these guys started out, a lot of them as you know, runners for moonshine and such, and then they had to develop the faster cars, and before you know it turns into racing. It seems almost such a natural progression, but I think you guys brought something out that I think is going to surprise people and educate even the people who consider themselves sophisticated racing fans. So when you put that in there and people talked about that, did you find people were reluctant to talk about that, or did you see some pride in that?
Oh, no. I thought that they were so eager to relive those days.
Yeah.
That, I mean, we did one interview, Michelle, with the three old-timers around the table, and they were just shooting stories back and forth, and, like, everybody was just, you know, having a great time, and you know, you really kind of get a sense of how involved these guys were. Even if they weren't racing, they were part of that history.
Yes.
And they loved it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I think that they enjoyed talking to me, the granddaughter, as well.
Yeah.
They enjoyed telling me stories about my grandfather because they could see in my face how much I loved it and was enjoying it. And so everybody wanted to talk to me. I had people calling me and, you know, just wanting to spend time telling me these stories about all the things that had happened back then. And so I do really agree with Michael that they truly enjoy the process themselves. And, we probably could have spent a whole lot more time on it, longer than we did.
Sure.
And I think that was the hardest thing for us, and I know you may ask me that question, but, the hardest part for me was figuring out what to leave out. There were so many amazing, just crazy stories and things that were just wonderful to imagine and enjoyable to think about, and everything was really important to me. So mm-hmm. it was really, really hard to, we obviously couldn't include all of the details about all of the stories.
Right.
And that was the most difficult part for me was figuring out what we had to leave out of the story.
This was started as a personal journey for you, I can see. But at what point did you guys realize that you were actually capturing a fading part of Americana, something that you were at maybe the last chance to get this story out?
Well, because of the time frames, everybody that we were talking to were in their 70s and 80s.
Right.
And so even with those, as I said, there were so many folks that were trying to reach me to tell me their stories. Sadly, there was one or two that actually passed away while, I had an appointment to meet with them next week, and they passed away that week. So that was, tragic and very sad for me.
Yeah.
But I felt like, if I am a granddaughter that doesn't know this information about my own grandfather, there's so many more people out there that don't know, stories about their own families. But sadly, I've got to catch them fast.
Yes.
Because time is running out. They're older, and they're going to pass away if we don't capture this information.
Yeah, and you were the last person to talk to some of them, because I noticed in the credits that many people who you had footage in the actual documentary you showed as, the tribute to. So you were like at the exact moment in time that you needed to be to capture these people's stories.
Absolutely. It is sad, but I'm glad.
Well, yeah, it's a bittersweet kind of thing. It's sad that they're gone, but it's great that some of them, at least most of them, got the chance to get their story down and tell it. And I'm hoping that a larger audience gets to see them, because these are very compelling stories. They're absolutely compelling stories. And I wish that I could see, you spoke about stuff that you cut. And I'd love to know what the process was in making those final decisions, because it must have been worse than for you, Michael, than any movie you've ever worked on, because this isn't just whether a scene works. This is somebody's life, somebody's, intimate story that you're deciding you got to cut.
Well, from start to finish, we're probably, this includes the screenplay, probably about 5 years.
Wow.
To get this film ready, And I think the original cut, Michelle, was somewhere around 3.5-4 hours.
Wow.
So, yeah, we had everything that we had in there was relative to the story of all the guys that were represented in the film. But as we start, we wanted to represent more family oriented, things.
Yes.
And how
you did.
How the guys were family men and how they, had to make a living doing this. Running moonshine wasn't a fun thing for these guys. This was their job.
Right.
And, they were gone, 6 nights a week.
Yeah.
And yet, we wanted to kind of show how the women were really, the matriarchs of the family. They were the ones that were raising the family.
Right.
Where these guys were going off hauling moonshine every night and then racing every weekend. And they made money doing it, but, back then, if they made $100 at a race, that was good for a month.
Right.
Sure. It's just interesting to kind of decide, we didn't want it to be a guts and glory movie outright.
Right.
We wanted it to be more of an emotional journey based on the fact that these guys had to make a living. They had mouths to feed. It was fun, but it was also work.
Yeah.
But, how did their lives manage? How did they stay together with their wives? Did they stay together? How many times were they married?
Right.
You know, it's like, could a marriage withstand this kind of neglect, so to speak?
Sure.
And, you know, it was really interesting to kind of put that stuff in the film, but not necessarily because we wanted to give the full range
right.
of their lives.
Well, and you did, because one of the things you did do is you didn't just concentrate on the drivers. You talked about the unsung heroes, and there's a lot of things in there about the mechanics. And I noticed when you talked about, you know, sometimes it wasn't an easy job, I got the sense these mechanics sometimes just got a kick out of trying to figure out the next thing to beat the cop cars or then into the racing things, that there are some geniuses in these mechanics, and they don't always get the credit that they deserve. But you guys did that, and I think that's a great part of the film as well.
Well, absolutely, and there were so many others. Played a big part in these stories that we just absolutely did not have the time or space to fit in.
Right.
So we all along, Michael and I talked about how each individual person that we covered, you could do a whole movie on that one individual person, you know, because
yeah.
of their lives were so interesting and they were involved in so many unique things
mm-hmm.
That, you know, the time frame you could spend. It's been a long time just learning about that person. So each person could have their own autobiography, obviously, and documentary on each one. But we tried to fit them in because they all worked together, and it was just a moment in time when a lot of wonderful, crazy things were going on, and we wanted to show that.
Did you think at any time, because this is the thing that crossed my mind watching, had you ever thought of any time of serializing this? Using more of the footage and creating like some smaller but, you know, focused episodes, sort of speak of this.
Yeah, we made this movie based on a larger idea.
Right.
You know, like we've got probably 200 to 300 hours of interview footage. We've got thousands of images and vintage video, and there's so many things that we could expand on.
Yeah.
You know, I would say this would probably stretch. I mean, if there are six guys that we're covering as the main group,
yeah,
you could do a six arc,
right?
You know, limited series on Netflix. You know, you could do one episode for each guy.
That's what I was thinking.
Literally. You know, and that's something that, you know, would be great, but, you know, I mean, getting onto something like that is a little more difficult than people think.
Oh,
you know,
it's
not something that you can just kind of walk into Netflix and say, hey, I've got this six-part mini-doc, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, we love that, but it just doesn't work like that. So we did something that we thought we could entertain an audience with, you know, give them, you know, 3 days
right.
to kind of watch it. So they could break it down into, you know, 2 or 3 days if they wanted to.
Sure.
And there are definitive chapters in the storyline. So there's a definite break
yeah.
in between sections where, you know, if they wanted to come back to it the next day, they could watch.
Right.
Know, they could watch it in succession.
Sure.
Serialize it.
Another big important part of this film is the amount of vintage material that you guys put together. Tell me a little bit about, you know, accumulating all the vintage footage of races and these drivers and the newspaper articles and the, you know, some of the stuff that's from the time, the source material. That just, to me, cements the rest of it together. So tell me about that process of getting all that material and figuring out how to use it.
Mm-hmm. anything you want to add to that, Michael?
Well, I think it was just going through, you know, so people would give us DVDs of their footage that had been, you know, Super 8 millimeter transferred to video.
Right.
And there were lots and lots of duplicated footage. So I had to go through all the footage and find the duplicates and kind of say, okay, this is a dupe, this is a dupe, this is a dupe, but it has more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was really cherry-picking some of the more important footage, but also the good-looking footage. You know, it's a
right.
whole movie. So shaky, it's
sure.
dark, or, you know, it's not in focus, or it's going in and out of focus. It's like, it's pretty incredible what we were able to find amongst all of the vintage footage and, you know, use that footage to kind of help tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
But it was some of the newspaper articles with some of the stories that they were telling that I had to put together. You know, they're talking about a race in 1960.
Right.
That was a 300-lapper with Bob Bertram and
yeah.
Donnie and Bobby Allison. And they're talking about this race. And as I'm going through all of the newspaper articles, I found the race. And I was able to use that as a visual to their story.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, you know, kind of important for me to try to get as much of that truth in there while they're telling the story, you know, to kind of show people that it actually happened. This isn't
right.
made up stuff. This is, you know, it's doc. But, you know, finding that stuff is took a lot of time.
Yeah. And it was a dangerous job. It was a dangerous job that they did. And one of the moving parts of looking at these people was when they talked about their fallen comrades. To me, it was almost, you know, I don't want to belittle people went to war, but it was almost like listening to people talk about the people they lost, you know, the people that they crashed and they didn't have the safety equipment we have today. So you did a good job of bringing out that emotional thing. Was that something that came natural? Was there a technique that you used to try to bring out these emotional?
Well, I mean, there was no trick to it. I mean, they told their story, and as they were telling their story, they, you know, we had, I'm thinking of Friday Heffler's son at this moment, but as he was talking with us, I mean, it, you know, he told us everything he wanted to tell us, and we, you know, did talk about the accident with his father,
yeah.
he told us his perspective on everything, and so it was very emotional for him, and it was very emotional for me as well. So I cried with them as they were, you know, as they, I had the same emotions, and I will tell you that even with my own grandfather, I cried so much throughout this whole process because I just, lots of different emotions for me. I was very, you know, excited, very happy, very thrilled about things. But then on the other hand, there were times that I felt so guilty that I had not asked him more about his life while he was still here.
Sure.
And why was I having to do all this work to get this information from other people?
Yeah.
You know, was I so self-absorbed that I didn't, know, spend time with him, and what would it be like if I was able to hear these stories from him?
Yeah.
What else would he tell me? Or and so it was, you know, coming from my own perspective, it was a very emotional journey for me putting this together. So I was feeling the same feelings that the other family members were feeling as they were talking about their family members. So it was. There was a lot of tears and a lot of laughs.
Yeah. From my perspective, as, you know, just making sure that everything was, you know, put together well, Michelle made an environment, it made a comfortable environment. She made them feel like they could talk about anything. And I think that's the sign of a good producer, especially in this type of film, where, you know, you're talking about things that are really personal to you, and you're sharing things. Like, we we had no idea people were going to share what they shared.
Right.
And some of the stuff, you know, we were like, you know, we can't put that in the movie because that's not part of the movie, number one. But number two, it's not something we really want people to know about certain elements of these guys.
Sure.
You know, we just felt like, you know, we were celebrating them, but we were also telling their real, their truth. You know, we had to get, you know, to one, from one end to the other.
Yeah.
Each one of them has an arc. But I think the comfort zone allowed them to feel like they could let their guard down.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened with Jay, is that, you know, Jay was just one of those guys that was so young when his father was killed.
Right.
In an accident, that he didn't really get to know his dad.
Right.
And, you know, and then he found this video of the actual crash, and you know, he's talking about it.
Right.
And he's, you know, emotionally drawn to that moment. And then I was able to find the crash, and it's devastating.
It is.
There were some people that we wish we could have included or interviewed, you know, mainly on the NASCAR side.
Right. Yeah.
And Michelle knows who I'm talking about, you know, as far as, like, you know,
the big names.
Some of the bigger names and some of the, you know,
yeah,
some of the people that actually run, because there are some controversial stories with Michelle's granddad, Charlie, about, you know, certain races. And,
yeah.
You know, it would be great to have other perspectives on them, but,
right,
you know, sometimes you just can't get in with, right, those people. They're just difficult to reach, or, you know, that's the hard part, is,
yeah,
you know, trying to get the full story and, they're requesting, you know, a fee, or they don't have,
right,
to talk to you, and you just have to kind of move forward.
I think that's a testament to your ability to get these people to talk, the emotional connection you must have made. I have to tell you, the movie was moving to me. I, you know, my father passed, and I sat there wishing that this is something I could share with them, quite honestly, because, you know, we went to it. It was a different circuit. It was different names. But I after I watched this, I ended up going on the internet to look up Al Tasnati, who was the guy who I followed a lot when I was a kid, driving stock cars up in eastern Pennsylvania. So I wish I could have shared this with my dad. So I kind of get that family connection. I think that your grandfather would be proud of what you did. I think that you didn't get that out of him when he was alive was not any kind of a flaw on your part. Anything you didn't do, I mean, you know, the fate just wasn't there for that kind of conversation. You had no reason to know there was that to talk about. So I think you did him proud, and I think that I think he's probably smiling somewhere and saying, yeah, that's the story.
I hope so. That was the overall purpose of this, is really is to make him proud. Nobody knew about this. Nobody knew him. His name is not known, and so I wanted everybody to know about him and his story, and along with that, there was, you know, we found the other friends that he was racing with that had incredible stories that most didn't know about either, so I wanted to include their story in addition to his, and so that was the whole purpose of doing this, was to hopefully have them, you know, if there's some way of them knowing that they're smiling wherever they are.
I think they are.
The interesting thing for me, mm-hmm, was listening to these Hall of Famers, these really, like, pioneers that raced in a lot of the early Grand National races, talk about Charlie as a competitor. You know, like, and all the guys from Chattanooga, you know, even, you know, some of these guys that were racing some of the first big, you know, oval races.
Right.
You just kind of listen to them talk about it. I think, Michelle, correct me if I'm wrong, Rex White was the one that mentioned the inaugural race to you.
Yes, absolutely. The first time that we were at it, my husband and I went to an event to learn more of the Moonshine Festival that we have here in the South, here in Georgia,
uh-huh,
and we went there to learn, to try to meet more people, and I went out and had a t-shirt made with my granddad. This is early on when we were trying to find people to talk to. But I had a t-shirt made with my granddad's picture on it and, you know, his name with the race car and some of the old pictures that I'd already gotten. And so my husband and I both wore these t-shirts. And we were just walking around this festival trying to get people to come up and talk to us and see if they knew my granddad. And so, but at one of those events, Rex White was there, and Freddie Fryer actually took me up to introduce me to Rex. And the first thing that Rex said to me when Freddie told him that I was Charlie Griffith's granddaughter, and I said, "Well, do you remember Charlie?" He said, "Of course I do. He won the first Daytona 500," and just said that right out loud, right, you know, to me, the first thing he said. So that really got my adrenaline going.
Wow.
And I said, yes, okay. So, that was the funny thing for me as well, is that sometimes this process kind of dragged on a lot longer than Michael or I wanted it to drag on. We wanted to be finished way before. But anyway, as the time went on, I would kind of lose my enthusiasm about it. I'd be ready to be done with it, and I would be ready for it to be over. And then somebody would call me or send me some information that would just be so exciting. My adrenaline would be, really high again, and I'd be ready to go and do some more research and find some more stories. And so it was very a very emotional process for me, as I mentioned.
What I thought was interesting about Rex's comment about Charlie winning the inaugural 500 race was, that's still, to this day, the most controversial race in racing history based on who won the race.
Right.
There are people, Lee Petty was the one that was given the win, but then there were people that said that Johnny Beauchamp won the race.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are people that are saying Charlie actually won the race. Charlie came in third, but when you think about it, it's like this is what these stories are about.
It's history, man.
How did these guys, they raced, and Rex White raced in that inaugural race with Charlie. So, these guys raced with him, Donnie and Bobby Albison, they're huge racing stars. They had fond memories of Charlie and the Chattanooga guys. And, we just wanted to kind of make sure that everybody got their time in the spotlight.
Yeah. Well, listen, I got to tell you guys, I am so, so grateful that you took the time to join us and share these memories and share this movie-making experience, because it's so much more personal than most of the interviews I get to do for their subjects. So why don't you tell people how they can get in on this action? Tell them how they can see this movie. Where can they go to see it? Where is it going to be released? Tell us how we can get copies of this out to people.
Well, we just went live with it, actually, this week. And it is out on a website called www.itsintheBloodMovie.com. So if you visit that website, you can watch the movie right then and there, streaming, or you can purchase a DVD or a Blu-ray, and that can be mailed directly to your house.
That's wonderful, and I'll make sure to include that link on the interview so people just won't even have to type anything in. They'll just be able to click that and get to it. It's a great movie. It's a piece of Americana that you don't want to miss out there, and I want to thank Michael Starr and Michelle Talbert for sharing this story and for sharing this movie with me. It was a pleasure.
Our pleasure.
Thank you so much, Gina, for having us.